The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode of the America First podcast with me, Sebastian Gorka, is brought to you by Franklin Armory. Shop freedom, quality, and innovation at franklinarmory.com. Franklin Armory, we are facilitators of freedom.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
Ask what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... And the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka. I'm very proud and excited to introduce our guest host for today, Grant Stinchfield.
Well, thank you, Dr. G, and thank you for letting me fill in for you on this Friday. And, you know, we heard George W. Bush's comments there about the rest of the world will hear you soon with those buildings being knocked down by terrorists. It is hard to believe that it's 21 years, isn't it? 21 years come Sunday of the 9/11 attacks. I've got a special guest coming up a little bit later in this hour, and we'll talk about that. You know, the other big news, of course, is Queen Elizabeth passing. This was a pillar on the world stage, and I think everyone will mourn her loss. She really stayed out of politics, which I hope the new King Charles will stay out of politics. He's been pretty controversial along the way. I'm not sure he's going to be able to do that. I am not going to do, though, what the mainstream media wants us to do. And that is focus so much on Queen Elizabeth that we forget about what's really going on in America today and some of the most important stories going on in America today. The failure of the Biden administration, of course, and election integrity. Yes, we still have a huge problem on the election integrity front, and I refuse to give up on it. I think you've got Republicans in many states across the country, including Arizona and Pennsylvania and Michigan, saying, oh, we've done all these great things when it comes to election integrity, and we get nothing. You know, I live in Texas, which is a red state. Our governor, Governor Greg Abbott, is a decent guy, but he's no Ron DeSantis. And I got in an argument with a buddy of mine who lives in Florida and says, oh, you got Abbott. We have DeSantis. This is great, great, great. I said, yeah, that's true. The only difference, though, between Texas and Florida right now is that Florida is red by the hair on a frog's you-know-what, okay? Now, Texas at least has a few more years of solid red. We're not going blue anytime soon. Florida could turn blue tomorrow, which is why election integrity in that state has to be first and foremost. So I came across a piece written by a good buddy of mine named John Lott. John Lott is great at statistics and using numbers. Originally cut his chops talking about gun rights and studying gun rights and really making an argument for gun ownership in America, lawful gun ownership. Well, he did a piece where he broke down some numbers in the 14 swing states across America. And I'm going to tell you something. When I read this piece in The Federalist, with the America First Policy Institute that was behind it, I thought to myself, how in the world is the mainstream media not covering it? I mean, we know why they're not covering it, because they don't want you to know there's a real problem in America with election integrity. But I want you to hear what he found here. The number of ballots counted versus number of voters don't match up. And they don't match up by thousands of votes across these 14 swing states. And here's what he found. They're not even keeping records of who voted, timestamping them as is required by a 1960 law. None of the states are keeping records, so we can't track this stuff down, but we do have the numbers. So I want you to think about this. He took the 100 most populated counties. 94 out of the 100 most populated counties in those 14 swing states, 94 of them had no records of who actually voted, okay? They got rid of these. And the average was a 2.89% discrepancy of people voting versus ballots cast, which means you had more ballots cast than people voting. That can either mean one of two things, or maybe both. Either people voted twice, or ballots were counted twice, or three times or four times, which I actually suspect probably happened. So I talked to you about Florida, and I want you to weigh in on this, okay? Because this story is so stunning that the media doesn't want to cover it when you think we have now actual proof that we counted more ballots than voters in 14 states, and nobody wants to cover this, and we hear the left tell us it's the most secure election in American history, 2020? I don't think so. 833-33-GORKA. 833-334-6752. 833-334-6752. I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, because I was absolutely bowled over when I started to go through the numbers. So Miami-Dade County, Florida is a swing state, by the way, and when you look at Rick Scott in 2018 won by 10,000 votes. The Republican senator from Florida by 10,000 votes. In Miami-Dade County, there was a discrepancy of 1.6%, meaning 16,617 votes. 92% of the precincts recorded, you ready for this? 92% of the precincts recorded more ballots cast than voters. That's in Miami-Dade. That number translates to 15,854 votes of more ballots than voters. Rick Scott won by 10,000 votes 2 years earlier. You're telling me there's not shenanigans going on? Where are Republicans on this? We know Democrats aren't going to do anything. We know they're going to hide this for as long as possible. So where are the Republicans? Where are Republicans in Florida? Ron DeSantis, I love you, brother. I really do. But as soon as this piece came out, you need to be out in front crowing about the problems in Florida. You got 15,000 in one county, 15,000 votes more than you had voters. That doesn't make any sense, okay? I want to bring up Cobb County, Georgia. Cobb County, Georgia, I'm proud to say I was one of the first to expose problems there on election night. In Cobb County, Georgia, you may remember the video of the suitcases being rolled out from underneath the tables, and then they had the flood, and they closed down the election center and send everybody home. And we're thinking, what in the world is going on there? Well, we never got answers to that, ever. I was told I was nuts when I said I have video. I'm watching video of people counting the ballots twice, running them through the machines. President Trump himself at a rally in Georgia played my video from Newsmax on this big screen and said, there it is. Game over. But it wasn't game over. They ignored it all. They told us we were all crazy. They told us the election is secure. Not even close. Here's how I know. Cobb County, thanks to John Lott and the American First Policy Institute, they had massive discrepancies. 34,893 votes, 8.8%. All but one precinct in Cobb County. One had more ballots cast than voters. How do you have more ballots cast than voters? How is this not the most simple of all simple things to get through? Somebody tell me. Now, that 34,000 votes in Cobb County is 2.5 times the 13,000 votes that David Perdue lost by. And I promise you, the 34,000 votes, 893, 34,893, they all went to Biden. And they all went to Warnock. Trust me on this one. That's the kind of problem I'm talking about. Now, in 1960, they passed a law that said all records from these elections must be kept for 22 months. As I mentioned to you, 94 of the 100 counties got rid of their records. We're not 22 months past that election. They got rid of them. That's breaking the law. Now, let me tell you this. In Cobb County, after the election, goes in and updates the voter rolls. Dead people, people that moved, and the like, they update the voter rolls. And guess what? They didn't save the old file so we could compare it. They overwrote the new information over the old file. That's not by accident, folks. This is the kind of thing I'm talking about. This is the kind of nonsense and shenanigans that not just change the outcome of an election, but change the direction of a country.
MyPillow is having their biggest sheet sale of the year. You all have helped build MyPillow into the amazing company that it is today. Now, Mike Lindell, my buddy, the inventor and CEO, wants to give back to my listeners. The Percal bed sheet set is available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they're on sale. For example, the queen size is regularly $89.98, but now for you, just $39.98 with your listener promo. Order now, because when they're gone, they're gone. The Percal sheets are breathable and have a cool, crisp feel. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't miss out on this incredible offer. It's a limited supply, so be sure to order now. Call 1-800-829-8468, promo code Gorka, or just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and plug in G-O-R-K-A. That's 1-800-829-8468 or MyPillow.com, code Gorka. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Let's get back to the show with Grant Stinchfield.
Well, hi there, folks. It's a great pleasure to be filling in for my good buddy, Dr. Sebastian Gorka. I cannot believe that we are going to be now 21 years from the September 11th attacks. These attacks had such an effect on my life. I grew up in New York. I was working for WNBC at the time. I was one of the first to Ground Zero. And let me just tell you a quick story. I had taken pictures with one of those disposable cameras from my time in and around Ground Zero, interviewing victims' family members. I had all kinds of pictures. I put that camera in my briefcase. You know, I never developed the photos. And I thought, as long as I have that camera, I will never forget, because I've got the photos. And if I start to feel myself forget, I could just develop the photos. Right? I could develop. Can you imagine? We really, 21 years, we've come a long way developing photos. Well, that briefcase, I left at a former office and had to have it sent to me in Dallas with the camera in it. Gets lost. My briefcase gets lost. It was a nice briefcase. I didn't care about that. I cared about the camera with my photos of September 11th. It was a huge loss for me, but I will tell you this. I realized very quickly I was never going to forget. I didn't need the photos. One reason why I never forget is because of the people that were affected by that. I met a man named Rob Fazio. He was there with his brother and his other family members looking for his father, Ronald Fazio, who was on the 99th floor of the South Tower, and managed to get his whole office out. When the first plane hit the other building, he said, "I want you all out of the building. Go home." Loudspeakers going off. "Go back upstairs. Go back upstairs." "No. Back down. Go home." He gets out of the building. He's holding the door for others. The next plane hits. Ron Sr.'s gone. He had called his wife, said, I'm fine. He wasn't. His son now has started an organization called Hold the Door for Others. And it's an amazing organization to help people deal with grief. He has a doctorate in psychology. He's a great executive coach. He's got a new book out called Bully Proof, which is fabulous. Go get it. But beyond that, I want to welcome my buddy, Rob Fazio, to the program. Rob, welcome.
Grant, thanks for having me. It's always great to reconnect with you around 9/11 and share our memories and stories.
You know, we've been doing this every year since, and I was in your wedding. We became dear and close friends after this. I remember writing you a letter in the days following, telling you that your father was a hero and that, you know, I've never seen the country come together like I did after September 11th. And boy, have we fallen from that, you know, 20 years later. This country's never been so divided. How do you feel now? How do you assess what's happened in the last, you know, 21 years for you, your family, the country?
You know, I think it's, like they always say, it's a process. So how do I think about it? I think 21 years later, 21 times stronger. And I've always had that mindset of we have to match our grief with growth. When those towers got knocked down, we need to find something inside of us that we could fight for and be Americans and feel that resilience. And you remember those days on the streets, just walking around, that instant bond that is cemented in life for human beings for time to come, and a bond that can never be broken of Americans that were all in a traumatic and grieving process together.
You know, you'll be down at Ground Zero on Sunday. You're reading names Sunday. I was so afraid to go. It took me 21 years. I just went a few months ago for the first time. Well, I guess it was 8. I was there for the first and second anniversary of it. But, you know, it took me 18 years to go back. I got strength. I was shocked. Is it the same for you?
It is. You know, I've been every year since. And, you know, God willing, I'll be there every year for the rest of my life. And one of my friends in the early years, we had no memorial. And we just had this huge platform that you'd walk down into where the footprints of the North and South Tower are. And one of my friends came with me once, and, you know, he's a New Yorker, and this is probably the 5th or 6th anniversary. And he said, you know, Rob, I get it now. He's like, what? He's like, you always come back from the ceremony so energized. And I said, yes, this is where I recharge. This is where I get energy. It's where I get my strength and my power, because that's where my dad lost his life helping people. And that makes me so proud and gives me energy to want to do more good out there and help people.
You know, I was always so impressed by your, I call it a sense of humor, even through the most tragic times. Folks, I'm telling you, I'm standing out there. I've interviewed people going through the worst times of their life. And here comes Rob and his brother with a sign that says, if found, please feed Reese's peanut butter cups, about his dad, his dad's favorite candy. You ended up naming your daughter Reese as well. But tell me how you managed to still have some sense of humor through a time that had to be the hardest of your life.
You know, there is so many different emotions, a wide range. And I was of the mindset of, if there's any way possible to find my dad, we were going to do that. And my family and I and friends really set out looking for him. And what I realized was I was trying to figure out what strength meant. Was strength crying and being upset and grieving my dad, or was strength in being so focused and disciplined in finding him? And I realized that it was both. And within that, the humor helped us connect with people. Once people heard that story and picked up on it, they had a moment of levity and great tragedy. And in order to know joy, you need to know true suffering. And it was kind of that yin and yang of both going on. And it's really powerful. And as you mentioned, it's become such a part of our family. Matter of fact, the Reese's factory put a bench with my dad's name right in front of the plant. So anyone who goes to make a Reese's peanut butter cup sees my dad's name on a bench, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's amazing. Real quick, if you can, in about 30 seconds, Hold the Door for Others. This is another one of those great organizations that rose out of the ashes of September 11th to help so many people. What is Hold the Door, and where can people find you? Real quick, if you can.
So based on my dad's lax actions of holding the door for people, we focus on meeting people where they are, but inviting them to grow through their adversity. We do different events where we realize coping's not enough. We want people to develop skills for themselves and to bring others along for that journey and ride so they can grow through trauma and adversity and not stay stuck.
You know, Rob, I think God works in mysterious ways because, you know, I don't have my Newsmax show anymore. I got big announcements coming very soon, though, on that front. You and I always do an interview. I didn't have a big platform. I had the L.A. show, but not a big platform. And then Dr. Gorka asked me to fill in on a national broadcast on the day I'd want to interview you. And here we are again. We ride again. I'm proud to call you my friend. Buddy, God bless you and all the family members of the 9/11 victims.
Thank you, sir. Here's to more doors.
Absolutely, buddy. Absolutely. And look, folks, get his book, Bully Proof. Any bookstore, Amazon, you name it, it's great. We're back in a flash.
Uncle Tom 2 is the eye-opening documentary everyone in America should see. Sebastian Gorka here, and Uncle Tom 2 offers a compelling and brave analysis of the true history of Black America, the cultural shift from prosperity, integrity, and faith to the current perceived state of anger, discontent, and victimhood. Uncle Tom 2 offers historical footage, photos, correspondence, and data to reveal the genuine strides of Black America in the 20th century, the deliberate Marxist strategy to create racial tension and replace God with government, the NAACP's sinister agenda, the fall of Black Harlem, the truth behind Black Lives Matter, and the demoralization of America for political power. Don't miss Uncle Tom 2 from executive producer Larry Elder and director Justin Malone with Brandon Tatum, Vody Bochum, and Chad O'Jackson. Watch the movie on demand or buy the DVD now at salemnow.com. That's salemnow.com, salemnow.com. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Let's get back to the show with Grant Stinchfield.
Well, thank you, Dr. G. It's an honor to sit in for you this afternoon. So one of the great benefits of my job when I was at Newsmax and doing radio all over the place is you get to meet the coolest people. And then every now and then you meet somebody that becomes your real friend. Remember I told you earlier I don't have a lot of friends? We interviewed one of them on the program, my buddy Rob Fazio, who lost his dad on 9/11. And I mean it when I tell you I don't have a lot of friends. This guy I consider a real true friend. He's a good man. I'm talking, of course, about the actor Robert Davi, director of My Son Hunter. This movie is on fire. Robert Davi is everywhere. This could be one of the most important movies of the year, if not the decade, Robert. You gave me a sneak preview. I was so honored to see this a few months ago, and I said, man, you got it. You're on to something here. How is it going?
Well, it's, taking off. It's almost like the, instead of what happened to the moon landing, the moon rocket that wasn't able to take off, this is because of the Breitbart power machine behind it, the super rockets Breitbart has, it took off into the stratosphere and it continues to do that. And I got to tell you something, it's become more than a film. You know, it's like the middle finger to the established media, big tech, and from a Hollywood. It's like giving the big middle finger to them, you know?
This movie, Robert, as you know, goes all through Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, their relationship, all of Hunter's misdeeds, the prostitutes, the misdeeds with oligarchs and you name it, and the spies. If this was Don Jr., you had made a quote that I read that you said they would have turned out all the Hollywood starlets, would have been lined up on the red carpet in Hollywood to watch this movie. But since it's Hunter Biden, not so fast.
Yeah. Well, as we saw, why? Because, like I said, this film is it's more than a film. We're giving the middle finger to the established media, big tech, and to Hollywood. Look, they suppressed this film. We've seen for years, and I talk about this as you have and Sebastian, everyone does, that the Russian collusion story, which was phony, which was a paid-for dossier, and the Hunter laptop, which they buried. And we find out big tech buries it. I mean, this is a look at even today, people that haven't seen the film will criticize it on the left. Those that see it are loving it. But still, even if they see it and they're fact checking, it's so interesting. They're fact checking and it's choking them as they're fact checking because they're saying this happened. this happened. So then they have to criticize it in a different way.
You know what? I know what's amazing to me is I haven't seen a ton of criticism. I've seen some of it, but I haven't seen a lot. And what I deduced from that is the left doesn't want to even talk about this movie.
No. They're talking about it, Trent. I mean, there's a lot of noise out there. There's a lot. Rolling Stone magazine. I mean, there's a lot of these. Salon. There's a lot. But there's also Movie Guide. We've gotten. Let's just say on the IMDb thing, we're about a 7.8 to an 8.1. That's top. That's a 3,000 screen release.
Is there a legal reason why you can't
call Epoch Times? The Epoch Times gave us an amazing review.
Yeah, I mean, and it is. Look, I saw it, and I gave it an amazing review from the day I saw it. And I didn't even see the finished version of it yet when I watched it the first time. Compared to now, it was great then, and it's even better now. Is there a legal reason why you can't call this a docudrama? Because this certainly looks like a documentary.
No legal reason. I didn't want to do a documentary. I didn't want to do a docudrama. I wanted to do... This film was fashioned after American Hustle. It was fashioned after The Wolf of Wall Street and the Gucci film. I don't need to do another documentary. We've got great guys doing the documentary. But what captures the public's imagination and hearts and souls is a film that's done that tells a story, that develops characters, and at the same time saying, here are the facts.
Yeah.
As I say, in the opening of the film, this is not a true story except for all the facts.
This is why my buddy Robert Davi is so great. Of course, he's a fabulous actor. He's the director of My Son Hunter. You can get it at Breitbart, and that's where people
MySonHunter.com. They can go to MySonHunter.com. And, you know, the Unreported Story Society crowdfunded this film, Grant. It was Philem McAleer, Ann McAnally, and Magda Saigeda, who recommended me, Magda, for the film. But they crowdfunded this film, and it's for the American people.
All right.
It's for them to put their finger on a vote, only in the voting booth, but in culture. Culture leads the way.
Well, if you watch this film, I tell you, there's no way you can leave and vote for any Biden in the future ever again, or much less Joe Biden. Can you give us some inside scoop here? Did you get any phone calls from Biden attorneys, from Biden confidants saying, what are you doing? We're going to threaten you. You've been threatened to shut this project down.
Well, I'll tell you a couple of funny stories. One being when I went to Serbia, we filmed in Serbia. And when I went there, the hotel staff who were fans of mine, they were happy I was there. And this is an upscale hotel. They came to me and they said, they whispered, they go, you know who was here last month? I go, no, Hunter Biden, Belgrade. I'm thinking to myself, what's he doing in Serbia? Like just before we're going to film. And then while we were filming, which is interesting, Philem McAleer, who's the Northern Irish, one of the heads with his wife, Anne, and Magda, of the Unreported Story, comes along and says, you know, there's a documentary crew that wants to talk to the film, you know. They're doing it. I says, no, I don't want anybody around the film. I don't want them to, you know, I want a nice lid on this film until it's ready to be. And he goes, no, but it's okay. You know, they're all right. They were involved in South Park, and they're going to do this documentary on Hunter. And, you know, they're not going to, we've made them sign a non-disclosure thing. And I says, all right, I'm still a little uncomfortable. They were nice people. Believe me, they came as gentlemen. But I still didn't like, you know, have them come into my set and see this. And I'm sure they interviewed the actors. You know, after the end of the night, the actors want to talk. And especially after a few bourbons, the actors will talk a lot,
really,
you know.
Yeah.
And we have a great, I mean, Lawrence Fox, the English actor, does a brilliant job. You've got to see it. John James, who plays Joe. Gina Carano plays the Secret Service agent. She has like a modern day Bacall essence to her. Yeah. And you've got this young actress, Emma Goyevich, who plays because it's told through the eyes of a 25-year-old stripper who is a left-wing activist who then makes her money as a stripper to pay for college, meets up with Hunter, starts a relationship, and it's through her eyes, that this relationship, this love affair, that she finds out who he is, and then we get into the corruption of Ukraine and Russia and everything else. But so then months later, Philem says to me, he goes, you know that guy that showed up on the set there? I go, what? He goes, he was Hunter Biden's lawyer. I go, what? He's Hunter Biden's lawyer. I says, what do you mean? Here's the guy that gave $2 million to bail Hunter out of his tax problem. And he's Hunter's lawyer. I
said, he showed up on set.
And he, now, they didn't stop anything. I don't know why they came. Maybe they were just, you know, but they took a private jet and a few people showed up.
Let me tell you this, because we're coming up at the end of the break, and on Seb's show, it's a hard break. You got to watch this movie. Nobody is going to shut down Robert Davi, I can tell you that much, and certainly no lawyer is going to scare him out of doing a movie. I know this guy well, and Robert Davi, it is great having you on
the challenge out there. There'll be some nutcase that comes after me now. Hey, I'm a peace-loving guy.
I'll come and bodyguard for you. I don't have a Newsmax show. I can work nights now, okay? I can work nights. Robert Davi, thank you, buddy. MySonHunter.com, MySonHunter.com. We're back in the class.
Second Amendment Friday on America First, brought to you by Carr Firearms.
Well, hi there, folks. Grant Stinchfield here. Talk about Carr Firearms. So Donald Trump believes America should always be first, right? We know this, and his patriotism rallied Americans in a manner we have never seen before. Carr Firearms loves America and shares President Trump's patriotism and passion for freedom. They have been making truly beautiful line of custom engraved pistols to honor President Trump. I've seen it. I love this gun, by the way. It's stunning. The Rally, it's called. It's a 1911. Pays tribute to President Trump's ability to draw Americans together. It's covered with engravings depicting MAGA rallies and the love of America shown by Trump supporters. The engraving is amazingly detailed with pictures of crowds, President Trump, his signature, and the American flag. There are little messages from fans hidden in the engraving, such as, "Let's go, Brandon." And, of course, "God bless America." Keep in mind, these guns are not just art. They are shooters. Each one has a match-grade 45 caliber barrel, enhanced trigger, extended safety, skeletonized hammer, and True Glow night sights. These guns are made from stainless steel 100% in the United States. To get one of your own, just go to your local gun dealer. You will definitely want the Rally Cry 1911 in your collection. Look at it there. It's freaking awesome. Get them while you can, especially if you live in certain states, like Oregon, for instance, which is looking to pass a whole slew of gun laws. And, of course, they have help by the media, because the media never covers lawful acts from gun owners who stop mass shootings, gun owners who use their firearm in a positive way to keep those around them safe. The media doesn't want to hear those stories. Well, the National Rifle Association, a group I told you that I have had such an amazing relationship with, you know, I spent so much time at NRA TV. The NRA is important. I'll tell you, they're out fighting for us, and they are important. They released this ad specifically calling out the media, and this story, you have to hear it to believe it. Listen.
I'd rather look like this than be lying dead next to my family. This right here is the only reason we're alive. No one ever told my story, and we all know why. My name is Raul, and on July 3rd this year, we were celebrating our freedom at a friend's house when the unthinkable happened. A neighbor we never met came in uninvited and started shooting at all of us right out of the blue. Before I can actually comprehend what was happening, one of our dear friends was shot and died instantly. Next thing you know, the shooter shot me right in the side of the head and through my left eye. Everyone in the house was screaming bloody murder and thought I was dead. What felt like an eternity passed, and then my eyes opened by God's grace to the sound of the shrieking screams of my wife, two daughters, and friends who knew I carried a concealed pistol. The shooter broke away from the fight and started to reach for his second gun, with my family lined up as his next victims. But I put four shots in his chest and sent him straight to hell. If I didn't have my gun, everyone in the house would have died. The news vans would have been front and center. But because I did, he never even heard about it. Evil will always exist, and we are more ready to confront it with equal force now more than ever. My name is Raul Mendez, and I am a proud lifetime member of the National Rifle Association of America.
So we would have never known about that story because the mainstream media is not going to tell. That's powerful. The guy's shot in the eye. He gets up. He saves his family's life because he's a concealed handgun license holder, carrying his weapon on him, puts four shots in that shooter and sends him straight to hell, as he said. God bless him. He's blessed to be alive, by the way. Some people say lucky to be alive. Lucky was a racehorse at Belmont. That man's blessed to be alive. With that, I want to welcome in Lars Daleside. He's a friend of mine, and he is a spokesperson over at the National Rifle Association. He joins us by phone. Lars, welcome to the program.
Appreciate you having me on, Grant.
Lars, that's a powerful story, man, and only the NRA is telling stories like that.
Yeah, well, we actually got a little bit lucky on that. One of his cousins lives a few miles away from NRA headquarters. Ran into him, got in touch with him. He told me the story. We reached out to Raul, and he was told me the story again. And I was like, listen, this is something powerful, and nobody's heard anything about it. And, you know, we'd love to be able to share this with more people. And he was more than willing to share. He thought it was important to get the message out. And, you know, as he was saying and thing, he happened to be carrying, luckily, because Arizona has constitutional carry.
Yeah, and there you go. So, and more and more states are moving towards constitutional carry, which basically says, folks, that the Constitution is your permit to carry a firearm, which I believe in. I live in Texas. Texas has went to constitutional carry as well. And, you know, that's literally just supporting the Constitution. We applaud states for doing it, but really it should have been like that from the very start. Now, Lars, this guy was shot through one side of the face. The bullet goes out his other eye on the other side of his face. He tells a story. He wakes up hearing the screams. I cannot imagine one being under fire and firing back, much less being shot through the face and having the wherewithal to do this.
Yeah, we had to condense it, of course, to get it up there in the video. But as he was explaining this to us in about a half-hour conversation, he was the second person shot. The first one that got shot died instantly, unfortunately. Raul went down. He said that his head was covered in blood. His wife thought he was like right beside him, tried to get him up. He was unresponsive. She took the kids, ran to a room, and he regained consciousness like 30 seconds later, heard more screaming, more shooting, and was luckily had the wherewithal at that point in time to get up, advance, and fire. And this is not a former police officer. This is not a former military guy. This is somebody who believed in the right to keep and bear arms, would go to the range every now and then to practice. And it was, and as you said, it was by grace he was able to take care of the situation.
Unbelievable. Amazing story. I'm so glad you tell it. Hey, real quick, in about, you know, 30, 45 seconds, if you can, the NRA is still under fire right now. You know, Letitia James in New York is bringing everything she can at you. You've got other radical attorney generals doing the same thing. How important is people's support right now?
Oh, it's incredibly incredibly important. Having out there, as you said, I was talking to you earlier about how things are. You know, we get tons of calls. We get tons of cases. We get hundreds of thousands of people asking us for help almost on a daily basis. And we try to help each and every person that we can, but we can only be in so many places at once. So the more support, the more help that we can get from the public on these things, you know, whether it be through phone calls or volunteering or donations or memberships, it's vital to the overall operation of the NRA.
I can tell you guys are doing great, and I appreciate you coming on the program. Lars Daleside, go to NRA.org to help them out. NRA.org. I'm Grant Stinchfield sitting in for Sebastian Gorka. We're going to do some sound bites of the day coming up next, and boy, do we have some doozies. Stick with me.
I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Let's get back to the show with Grant Stinchfield.
Well, thank you, Dr. G. It's a great pleasure sitting in for you on this Friday afternoon. It's also a great pleasure when I get to talk to people like Mark Morgan. He is the former acting commissioner of U.S. Customs and Border Protection. He's become a great friend of this program, of course, of my show on Newsmax when I had it, and he's become a friend. Mark Morgan, welcome. Oh, I don't hear audio.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I got you. Okay, good deal.
Okay, good.
So, Mark, tell me, We had a rescue from some border agents. These guys are supposed to be the most evil men and women on earth, but they saved a whole bunch of migrants, didn't they?
They did. Grant, look, and thanks for taking a couple minutes to talk about it. That's what they do every single day. So far in the Biden administration, it's close to about 30,000 rescues that the men and women of Border Patrol have conducted, literally risking their lives. The video we're talking about, I really encourage those listening right now and seeing it to go in and look at that, is that these border agents are actually jumping in the water as the current's moving, literally risking their lives to save migrants. And Grant, they're not asking these migrants, hey, are you illegally entering the United States? Why are you doing it? They're not asking those questions. They just see a human being in distress, and they're risking their own lives. And this is one of the things that gets me really fired up. This secretary, one of the biggest lies, Grant, that he tells American people is that he's developed a safe and orderly and humane illegal immigration system. First of all, it's an oxymoron. There's no such thing. And under his watch, there's been more dead migrants that have piled up on our southwest border. We're looking around 1,100 to 1,200 dead migrants that the CBP alone has recovered. And that's not talking about the state and local officials, the amounts that they've recovered. And that's not including the number of migrants that have died on their journey, making it through the Darien Gap and et cetera. It's absolutely outrageous.
Look, every one of our listeners and viewers know that the Biden administration has incentivized this disaster.
Yep.
But when they incentivize a disaster like this, they put the illegal aliens' lives at risk. And really, they put the border agents' lives at risk. They wouldn't have to be swimming into the Rio Grande if it wasn't for this incentivization of immigration, illegal immigration.
Yeah, that's right, Greg. And look, and we're just talking about the number of migrants that we found dead. But think about the additional atrocities. Look, non-government organizations, nonprofits have said that up to 30% of young women and children are raped on the journey up there. We know that girls as young as 12, 14 years old, they're actually provided the morning after pill, sometimes by their own parents, because they know and anticipate they're going to be sexually assaulted on the journey up here. And then, of course, Grant, you and I have talked about this many times, but you'll never hear this from the administration or Secretary Mayorkas, that the countless number of these illegal aliens are smuggled. Once they get in the United States, then they become victims of trafficking and the associated atrocities with that. But you're never hearing any of that from this administration. And look, it's just a few weeks ago that 53 migrants died in the back of a tractor trailer from asphyxiation. One of the worst deaths a human being could go through. And how much of this did you hear from the mainstream media? Zero. What did President Biden say about it? Zero.
Yeah, it's such a shame, and it's just maddening. I want to ask you, because there are some governors that are trying to do things. Governor Abbott is actually one of them. You know, I've got mixed feelings. I live in Dallas. I've been a Texan now for 20 years. He does some good things. He's got some things I wish he would declare an invasion and do a little things a little stronger. So I ask you, where do you put Governor Abbott on the scale of doing things to stop this illegal immigration? Could he do more? Is he doing enough?
Yeah, Grant, I think that's the question. Look, I spent a lot of time in Texas, obviously, a lot of time on the border. This week, I was just in Austin, Texas. I was actually at the Capitol of Texas. We were there, and there was a few of us, former Chief Rodney Scott and the former Deputy DHS Secretary Ken Cuccinelli and a host of others actually spoke there. And I tell you, it's challenging because from my perspective, I look at the facts. This isn't a right or left thing for me. And Governor Abbott, at this point, he's actually done more than any governor in this country. Now, there's other governors that have done some good stuff. I obviously DeSantis is up there. But as far as actually physical on the border and filling the void from a law enforcement perspective that's been left by this administration to abdication of their responsibility, he's done more than any governor. Operation Lone Star, for example, it's been in existence for 16 months. They've apprehended over 2,000 illegal aliens. They've confiscated and seized tens of thousands of drugs, including enough fentanyl to kill every Texan three times over, weapons and U.S. currency. The list goes on and on. But here's the problem. He's limited, Grant. Because U.S. v. Arizona is very clear that states cannot enforce federal immigration law. So he's stymied somewhat. And that's why we come to the constitutional issue, the invasion. He's not there yet. I think we need to continue to push him to have more dialogue and get him there.
And I think what it's going to take, Mark, is shows like this, people like you, me, our viewers and listeners out there, pushing him in that direction and ultimately putting pressure to it to declare an invasion. I think that would help the state of Texas. Mark Morgan, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you for your service to this country, and thank you for coming on this afternoon.
Thanks, my friend. Thanks.
All right, absolutely. Have a great weekend. Declaring an invasion, folks, is what needs to happen. There's no doubt in my mind about that. Hey, let's talk about California coming up next. Out of control. Do you know they had to fire up some generators? And guess what they used to fire those generators? We'll talk about it when we come back.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.